back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast transmitting from an undisclosed location in a non-extradition country. That's right. We're off the grid. We're powering this shit by solar panels and burning cow
this
dung.
This MF said prodcast.
Prodcast? Is that what I said?
This motherfucker said prodcast.
You know what? I'm not an orator. I'm not one of the greats. I never have been. Sometimes I stumble over my words because I'm a real guy.
Is that what the grink said?
The grink? What?
You're not online enough to get that one.
No, I'm gonna take that as a good sign for now.
I guess so. That's probably better for your mental state, I suppose. Though you are online in a worse way. This MF is on fucking Reddit.
Don't let the people know that. I don't want them getting flamed at my ultra elite Reddit account. You know how many subs I'm modding?
This sickie's a Reddit sickie. Isn't that right, sickie?
Oh, God. Don't look at me. Don't tell them how I live.
You're an anime sickie and a Reddit sickie. How do you come back from that?
You don't.
And you say prodcast.
You can only go lower. No, dig up, stupid.
There's no basement here.
Yeah.
This shit only gets worse.
Listen, if I had any aspirations of trying to better myself as like a person or you know, better my mental health or my physical health, I wouldn't be here watching anime and talking about it with you on the internet. Does that sound like the choice of a healthy person? It doesn't to me.
Certainly not. Certainly not. Then again, I have seen anime movies in theaters 3 times within the last couple months. And one of them I went to alone.
That's insane. You're saying that you went outside of your basement to watch an anime?
I watched anime in public. That's
oh,
how
God.
Bold and brazen I've been getting.
I mean, it does go to show how the times, they are quite different, you know?
They are a changing for sure.
Yeah.
Because 2 out of 3 weren't even new. They were just there.
I have a weird association with going to see anime in the theaters. I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago when I said I rewatched Steam Boy. And Steam Boy is actually, for some reason, like, it is a core memory I have of being...
core memory.
It is a core memory I have of being embarrassed about watching anime. Because I came back from that movie and one of my parents' friends, you know, was like, oh, what movie did you see? I like describe Steam Boy to them. They're like, oh, you're into that Japanimation stuff, huh? And like,
wow.
the rising flush in my cheeks was like nothing I had ever experienced at that point for like something that I enjoyed. I'm like, oh, wait, why do you say it like that? why do I feel like that was not a nice thing to say to me?
She couldn't tell from your Dragon Ball Hawaiian shirt.
I unfortunately never had one of those. I did have a...
Oh, sad.
I know. I did have a Hot Topic Full Metal Alchemist, like, graphic hoodie that I wore quite a bit in high school. So, not far off.
Yeah, I didn't really wear any anime merch too often. I know I definitely did have some kind of button up with an anime thing on it.
You weren't a headband guy?
I was never the headband guy. I was going in a completely different direction with my personal cringe at the time of the headband guys. I started wearing sort of like, not all the time, but I started wearing sort of like a black and red three-piece suit to school.
Oh no.
Every once in a while.
Oh no. You were suit kid.
Every once in a while. I don't know why, because I wasn't even like that into emo, but I was like copping sort of like an emo vibe, because I just kind of like was into that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The fashion, not the music itself, because I would be walking around with sort of like a piece of shit three-piece, like, awful, disgusting red and black suit. But I would be listening to, I don't know, Tower of Power and Dr. Dre. Like, not fucking My Chemical Romance or whatever would be, like, the black and red suit kind of guy. mid-period Green Day, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, American Idiot era.
Yeah, definitely American Idiot era.
I know, I can see it with your ratty Goodwill sport coat and a red button-up and, like, a black skinny tie.
With my vest. Yeah, I had a very nice vest.
You had a very nice vest. Excuse me.
I had a very nice vest, yes.
No, I can see it right now.
Yeah, I still don't know where that came from.
I don't know where it came from, but it has very obviously spiraled out of control, because now you're a full-blown tech wear addict. You were just describing to me all of your heat tech pieces that you owned.
Hey, that's just standard stuff.
You live in a high humidity, high sunlight area most of the year. You don't need all that heat tech.
Everybody needs some heat tech. I don't have to get into this. Anybody listening to this is already aware that the Uniqlo fundamentals are essential staples of any healthy wardrobe. In fact, you are the weird one here, so I wouldn't press your luck, buddy.
Okay. All right. So let's get back to the anime. You watched it in a theater. In front of other people.
Yeah, the point being, I was in public and I watched anime. I wasn't wearing any anime merch at the time. I'm sure some people in the theater with me were. I tried to, out of, a sense of politeness and camaraderie, I tried not to make eye contact with anybody.
Well, yeah, that's standard procedure, you know?
Yeah. But I did go to a fairly anemically filled out theater to watch the restored print of Vampire Hunter D.
Oh man, that's pretty dope. I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah, it's fucking great. It was the clearest print. This was, if I could just go and see Castle of Cagliostro, like in the theater, I would have hit the big three from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Mononoke, Vampire Hunter D, and Castle of Cagliostro, or like the anime movies of my youth.
Sure.
And also, due a little bit to that nostalgia, but also I think just from an objective standpoint, the three only good English dubs of anything. Those original dubs, though, because they have been redubbed, and the redubs are bad.
So, I mean, I know we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording, but what's going on with dubbing in, like, the last decade? What happened? Because
I don't know.
You know, we both remember... Okay, for me, at least, dub has never been my preferred, transference method. I engaged with it in my youth. I did not inhale. I did it out of necessity because that was just how you watch anime. And I'm sure some of it is, like I was saying...
we didn't know what we were doing.
It
was just a different time.
Yeah.
We didn't know we were hurting people.
And... I learned it from you. What I'm saying is I'm sure some of like that is colored by nostalgia and just memories from a long time ago of the dubs not being that bad. But as soon as I had the ability to like watch stuff with subtitles, like it instantly made everything better because like, again, people like make fun of anime Flappy Mouth, but at least the motions are matched up to the native dialogue when you watch it with subs. At least it's less noticeable.
Yeah, that is a big part of it. There is a mechanical reason why the original voiceover is better. Just on one point in particular, and it's that one, is that the dialogue is actually matched to the animation. That is not true when they bring it over. There is no amount of money for an English overdubbing that is going to go in and redraw the frames or whatever.
Yeah.
In fact, that has been tried, and it is abysmal. You'll remember there were some earlier anime dubs where they would try to extend the little talky parts. They would just add frames of the mouth flapping to accommodate longer dialogue.
And
that was awful. It was awful.
It spawned an entire genre criticism of anime saying, like, look, they just have mechanical Flappy Mouse. The words don't even match.
Yeah, it looks like shit.
Yeah.
It's awful.
So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with dub in the last couple of decades, but...
Well, and for me, I really did not like a lot of dubs from my childhood as well. I mean, I remember I had... you know, some Sailor Moon on VHS tapes. Yes, I'm old. I had some Ranma on VHS tapes, and those were both dubbed. And I remember, like, man, I really love Ranma. I really like watching these Sailor Moon tapes, but these voices are, like, really annoying a lot of the times.
Yeah.
You know, as a child, I remember thinking that.
Well, you were talking about the, for lack of a better word, cringe affectation that is so ingrained in the English
the modern dub.
Yeah, in the English modern dub, specifically for, like, young female characters, right?
Yes, there is a specific female character affectation that I find intolerable.
And the more I think about that and the clips that we watched and what you were talking about, and the more I remember watching the dub of Sailor Moon, like, when I was a kid, I think it goes way farther back, because I do not think Usagi's voice in the English dub, I think it was probably perilously close to what is still going on today.
It is. I think Usagi's was, like, a little bit better, but I do think there is sort of, like, a telephone game that has happened for Usagi's voice, mm-hmm. where people kept doing the Usagi voice and then adding on layers and layers to it until it became, like, a Flanderized version of Usagi's voice.
Yes, yeah.
Which is the one that we now have.
It is gone through many, many different paint layers to make it the monstrosity that it is currently. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Now,
yeah,
what's interesting, we were just talking about how, you know, dubbing something from into English and then just putting it over the the original animation and it not matching up.
Yeah.
And obviously there's also a language lost in translation thing that happens with that. You know, a big part of it is that the original work is made in Japanese for a Japanese audience and was directed by presumably a Japanese person, a company. You know,
usually a lot of the times that's the case. Yeah. To my knowledge.
Now I have had the chance recently to observe that the reverse of that is not true. I went back and I rewatched the first episode of the Devil May Cry Netflix show in Japanese audio with subtitles, and it made it better.
Though that is a hard case, though, right? Because in that instance, you are moving into a language that you do not understand. In a similar way, like, I listen to a lot of foreign rap, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, French rappers or you know, South Central American rappers like Anahitihu, and, like, those are languages I don't speak fluently, and I kind of like the flow better because I don't understand the language itself. There is a component to that. So I imagine there is something like that going in play. But there is also the novelty aspect, too, like when we listen to, Mexican Homer or whatever. Or Japanese King of the Hill, right?
Yeah, yes.
Like, that shit is very funny.
Well, okay, that's kind of what I was getting at, though, is... So the first thing I notice is, because, you know, on all of these streaming websites, streaming apps, all of the subtitles are language learning machines doing the translation, right?
Sometimes. A lot of times you will see the translation being credited to someone. So that is not a hard rule. That is not... like
it's
everybody.
It's appearing more and more.
Sometimes that's the case.
And that is what they did with the Devil May Cry animation.
Awful.
Well,
death
okay,
penalty.
Well, what it makes it interesting, because the machine translations are going strictly off of the Japanese spoken dialogue. So it's translating and then transcribing that.
Yeah.
It turns out that they changed characterization for so many characters. Like, they're straight up different people in the Japanese audio, and it makes it better, like, structurally.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
That is part of translation, is there is a large amount of interpretation going on, and I think some people forget about that. I think that is another big component.
you know, part of it is, you know how I mentioned that everyone is like swearing all the time for some reason?
Yes.
Yes. Totally not present in the Japanese audio. Everything is played so much straighter and like, you know, not serious, but it is not doing that like, haha, I know what I'm saying and that makes, I know what I'm saying oh. sounds like, and that makes it ironic.
There's not as many "that's what she said."
Exactly. Yes. So yeah, it totally removes that kind of like post-ironic, like American adult animation vibe that was so inherent to the English dialogue, and it makes sure. it more compelling to watch.
Well, let me give you another component too, and this was specific to Vampire Hunter D, because I saw it in Japanese and I really haven't seen it. I think I've seen like 3 cuts of this movie, and this might actually be the first time I've watched it in Japanese. And this is the weirdest experience I've ever had with this, because I prefer the original English dub of this movie to the Japanese dub.
Oh, interesting. Now,
it's not because of the translation or whatever, or even the voice direction, which I think are both fine. It is actually, and this relates directly to the English dub that came after the original one, but it is that the accent work is really good in the original English dub, where like the main cast is kind of like doing a fairly standard dubbing, like nothing to over exaggerate anything, though Ray Ginsay is the guy is doing like a Rutger Hauer voice for it, which is awesome. Great. That fucking kicks ass. But the vampires are doing like the bleh, like Transylvania thing, which fucking rules. And then when they went to re-translate it with this updated dub that I watched, they tried to give people in the village like Western, like Southern accents, which is
no,
awful.
that doesn't
just
make
fucking
sense.
Awful. No, it's fucking, well, it's because, you know, Vampire Hunter D is a Western, right?
Well, it is a cyber Western vampire thriller.
Yes, but the structure of the story is a Western, like a lot of these things. Yeah, and so I think that's what they were trying to play on with the Southern accents. The actors themselves aren't very good, but especially their accent work is just fucking god awful.
Well, yeah, but even beside that, and just I want to say this real quick, like it makes sense in the original dub because visually the villagers are all like based off of the quaint like European hamlet that is terrorized
yes.
by the vampire up in the castle. Like that's.
Yes.
That's what they are.
In the 80s dub, they correctly identify that because people like Greco or whatever, a lot of the villagers, will speak with sort of like vague European accents, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is also good. Like, I prefer that. That's a good choice. So, like, the fake Southern accent thing is just bizarre and terrible. And it really speaks to, like, oh, that there was, like, nobody at the fucking helm there. Like, no one was steering that boat, you know? the director was not present, which I feel is the case of a lot of these.
You know, sometimes you just take a job to get a paycheck, and that's okay. I'm not putting anybody down for that.
I wonder if anyone even got paid for that. It might have been an amateur dub, for all I know. They sounded like
you
amateurs.
It could have been a fan effort.
It might have been. You know, I didn't look into it. All I know was I went and got a copy of Vampire Hunter D, and it turned out to not have the original English dub. It had a new one, and that's the one that it had.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is unbearable.
That's like when I went to rewatch My Neighbor Totoro for the first time since I was like a little kid.
Yes.
I discovered that the only one that is widely available is the Disney redub with the Fanning sisters.
Yeah.
That's not what I remember. That's not my memory.
Well, that's also the same thing with Castle of Cagliostro. When I recently, like within the last couple years, I wanted to show it to some friends who had never seen it. And every version we found had the new dub.
Disgusting.
It's fucking awful. And it's really bad dub. And I really know that this sounds like old people having nostalgia, but I promise you, on every objective level, on every objective metric that you could come up with, the new dub is worse, just fundamentally worse. It's unbearable. And this is just being played out across so many fucking anime in every space. And anime seems to have a very unique and specific problem, because I've watched a lot of animation projects. You know, I'm not just an anime guy. I've watched a lot of animation from all over the world. And a lot of times they don't get the same treatment. You know, when you see there's a lot of animation coming out of France right now, and when that stuff gets dubbed, the American dub tends to adhere a lot more closely to the French original language. Is that because French is more similar to English than Japanese is? I don't know. Who knows? But somebody is making better choices when it comes to those movies.
Yeah.
And American cartoons, obviously. Like, people don't do the same affectations for American cartoons that they do for anime.
I would be very interested to see what the Japanese dub of something like Adventure Time was like. I've never listened to Adventure Time in anything other than English, but
yeah.
For the most part, I think that it's one of the better voice acted shows that was on TV, like animated shows.
Well, yeah, star-studded cast for the most part too. Like,
I mean, that helps.
Endless cavalcade of incredible people.
Yeah, you know, it's like the Princess Mononoke English dub. It is actually just a like movie cast filled with really good actors.
Yeah, but also film actors are not always very good voice actors, as we've seen a lot recently as well. You know. Now that we have this glut of 3D movies, we get to see like voice acting chops versus film acting chops.
Yeah.
And a lot of film actors cannot do the same thing.
Well, I mean, and then there's Keith David. He's the man.
Yeah. Sure. Keith David can do everything.
He can do it all. He can do it all.
Lance Reddick also could do everything. Lance Reddick really could do the whole, he was the whole fucking package, and he had incredible voice, and man, if he had done more anime, I think this world would be a better place. Who knows? But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing. That was my anime foray, though, and it had me thinking about translations a lot. Movie still kicked ass. Movie's fucking great. Movie's fucking great.
I love it. Vampire,
God damn, it's really good.
Vampire Hunter is in the Cyber West. It's always going to be cool. It's going to be
the
cool.
The entire audience laughed when Sensei pulls the cross from Doris Lang's throat and pulls her titty out. It's just such a shocking moment of like random nudity that everybody in the theater laughed.
I mean, I don't know.
I laughed too, because it is funny.
You've read the books, but I don't know exactly how graphic they were in terms of sexualization, but I think that was just kind of like what was expected of those straight-to-video OVA movies from the 80s, right?
Yeah, I would say that movie is even kind of restrained, because that part and one part later where Doris is in the shower, and a scene right afterwards where she's wearing a robe. Really the only parts in the movie that are kind of like lascivious in that way.
Well, it's no I was about to say Dark City. What's
it's
the
no Dark City. Rufus Sewell does not get his dick out in this anime.
Yeah. It's no Dark City.
Oh, it's, man, no Demon City Shinjuku.
That's one. Thank you. Demon City Shinjuku.
It's no Ninja Scroll.
You know, in fact, I think Ninja Scroll may go a little too far in places. I watched that not too long ago.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. They maybe took it to some weird places with what they were doing, willing to do to get a shock out of the audience with that one. You know,
it's a little intense. Yeah.
It's a little much.
And
there's some things I'd change. There's some edits I'd make.
Yeah. I wish I hadn't seen, you know. or had in my brain now.
But
like you did mention that I read the Vampire Hunter D books, and those books are very traditional adventure stories. There is obviously like a little bit of like sexual tension every once in a while, but there's really not that much like weird sex stuff.
I feel like D is always supposed to be kind of like the,
he's standoffish.
He's standoff. I don't want to say, you know, sexless, but he definitely has sex appeal. but he is concerned.
But he's no Witcher.
He's no Witcher. No, he's no Geralt.
He's no Witcher.
He doesn't fuck the way Geralt fucks, you know?
Vampire Hunter D is not out here fucking.
No.
Geralt is fucking like crazy.
He enjoys it. It's like one of his top five things to do.
Well, they both have complicated relationships to sex. Mm-hmm. You know, Geralt's whole thing is that, like, everywhere he goes, he gets, like, fetishized by women because they all think he's, like, a weirdo. They're like, oh, look at that white-haired, golden-eyed weirdo. He's got all those scars and shit. I bet it'd be weird to fuck him.
And he's muscle-bound and toned, and he can't get me pregnant.
Yeah, it's a point they bring up a bunch of the books.
Geralt is essentially, like, constructed from the ground up to be sexy.
No, that's another thing in the books. Like, you got to read these books, man. Like, it make a very big point that, like, he is not a handsome man.
Okay, but you should realize that, like, straight up traditional physical beauty for a man does not weigh the same that it does for female characters.
Oh, really? Are you going to tell us your theories about what women want? Mel? I'd love to hear more of your theories.
Well, first of all, you have to watch the movie What Women Want 50 times.
Uh-huh. Yeah. D, on the other hand, is beautiful. Like, ethereal. Like, he is so fucking handsome. Everybody who sees him, like, immediately gets both scared and horny at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he's
just from seeing his face.
He's a sexy goth bishonen, you know? He's a bishy.
Yeah.
He's a tall, beautiful man with long hair, and he kills vampires.
Yeah, he's sick as hell. He's a cool dude.
What I was trying to say is that D is generally presented as concerned with loftier goals. You know what I mean? He is a man on a mission.
Yeah, kind of.
The mission is to kill vampires.
Yeah.
Not to
well,
fuck.
Well, actually, his mission is to kill his father, like all good adventurers.
You're going to have to kill your dad.
See, this is, again, I've read these books.
Uh-huh.
Not all of them. There's like 50 of these fucking things, but I'm working my way up there. But I have been reading books. This is a good, this is a good jumping off point. Let me move on to the second thing. I have been reading books.
Oh.
I read the Witcher books. I read the Vampire Hunter D books. I talked last time about reading the Ishira books. I have read another light novel.
Oh, God. All right. All right.
I've read another one.
Yeah. Good for you.
I did another
one.
You're
reading books, but you're not reading literature.
No, I am not. And in particular, the ones I just read, these are terrible, terrible books. I really feel like
Are they
awful.
At least like, are they bad, or are they like good trash?
No, they're bad.
They're bad, bad.
They're like bad, bad.
Yeah, why did you read them then?
Well, for one thing, so I read the Rebuilt World series.
Oh yeah, the Ava rebuilds. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. The novelizations of the movies based on the anime, based on the popular ramen ramen flavor.
The popular horse betting website.
Yeah. The popular shaving cream brand.
The popular Nike shoe offshoot.
Yeah. The Rebuild World, I've been reading the manga for a little while, and there was sort of a recent anime adaptation news, so, you know, I've been thinking about it a lot. And having read Ishira and being like, you know, I don't feel comfortable judging the quality of Ishira until I've read at least one more of one of these popular light novels, I figured, well, I'm very familiar with Rebuild World already. I might as well see what's happening over there. Mm-hmm. Let's see what's going on, at least, you know. So I popped in, and I burned through a bunch of these things. And I have to say, the first thing that struck me, and tell me, this is very strange. Tell me if you find this strange. Each book, almost all of the books, are split into two parts. So there's like book one, part one, book one, part two. But those are discrete books.
Like, they were sold separately.
Yeah, and they have, like, a beginning and end and their own fucking, like, covers and, you know, each one has, like, their own bonus story for the light novel release because they're all, remember, these are all based on, like, web novel releases,
uh-huh.
Which I believe are chapter by chapter. So they're all collected into volumes.
So just to get this straight, you're saying that they release it, the volume, the book, and they title it, you know, book one, part one, and then part two, instead of just putting them together and calling it book one?
Yes. It's so weird.
That's so bizarre. Although I guess,
don't understand.
I shouldn't be too surprised. It was recently pointed out to me that lots of American book series get split up into the light novel format when they get published in Japan and China. Like, you know, at the risk of being controversial, the Harry Potter books where it came out in 20 discrete volumes. In Japan.
Harry Potter light novels.
Yeah, the Harry Potter light novels. they were broken up into 20 different light novel volumes instead of releasing as like 7 full length novels.
The thing that strikes me about that is how unsatisfying it would be to reach the end of one of those novels, right? One of these like volumes, and there just not being an ending.
Not even like written as if like, okay, this is an obvious conclusion for this segment and it is supposed to entice you to read the next one. It just is like a cold cutoff. Like,
yeah, like at the end of a chapter, like no off ramp at all.
Yeah. It would be incredibly frustrating, you know, to me.
I would be frustrated. And that's why I find this to be weird, because I don't know, maybe the author went in and like added off ramps, but each one of these parts has an on ramp and an off ramp, like very specifically. So it's very strange to me. That was just like the first thing that struck me.
I mean, it sounds like a decision to, it was obviously written in a much longer format when it came out online, and then they just chopped it up, you know, willy nilly to conform to whatever the standard, you know, publication preset is on these things. Like, all right, we're just going to chop it up every 5 chapters, every 100 pages, something like that. And then it doesn't matter it ends.
Yeah. You know, the literature business, the book publishing business, it's a nasty, nasty business. And they're just scrambling for the dear life right now anyway. So, I mean, who knows what they're thinking, right?
I, for one, I'm reading Stephen King's It for the first time right now. And
I'm sorry.
It's great. I'm having a fun time with it. It can't possibly get weird near the end or anything, right?
Yeah, wait. You should tell me. Let's talk about that 400 pages from now.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, like, how many light novel volumes would it be? It's like a 1,200-page book. We're talking about, like, at least 6 or 7, right?
Well, let me tell you, another thing that struck me about these Rebuild World books... each part seems to land somewhere between like 400 and 600 pages.
Wow, that's a lot longer than I assumed.
Yeah, I know. And we were just talking like light novels seem to land
that's
somewhere
between...
That's like
an actual book length, though. That's not a light novel. That's just a regular-ass book.
That's what I thought. I was thinking about that. Now, I do have the digital editions, so it might just be like, you know, one of those things. They've stretched out the pages to be certain lengths.
Sure.
But we did talk about how like light novels are generally landing somewhere between like 200 and 300 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So it also struck me as a little weird. But these things are pretty beefed up, maybe to their own detriment.
Oh, you're accusing the author of being a little too wordy?
Well, and we're going to get into translation troubles again here.
Uh-oh.
So I apologize again for our non-monolingual audience members, but there is some translation stuff going on, which I have deep suspicions about. But these novels are not good. Let me just get that out of the way. These are not good.
Well, that's disappointing.
And not even like in a they're, you know, trashy. These are like just they're badly written, very amateurish, and just like structurally sloppy. I cannot tell you how often this author repeats himself just over and over and over again. We do the same things.
And not even in like a American Psycho, like they're making a point about the repetition kind of thing.
No, in a like, hey, here we go. We're touring the cul-de-sac again because I'm still unsure whether I want to take you know, the road off our current path, because the author is like really afraid of like doing anything that like challenges or moves the plot along. Things just slowly accumulates plot detritus, which just bloats it up without ever pushing all of that stuff together to create any kind of energy. So it really feels like some fan fiction shit, where it's, you know, the kind of writing that is stream of consciousness in that way, where it's like, I just want to like write the thing that I'm writing right now, and like, who knows if this is ever going to connect up to anything else, or whether this is ever going to have a payoff. I'm not thinking about it that way. I'm just thinking about it as I'm putting more words on the page.
I get what you're saying. It's the urge to write the idea that you're having right now immediately, whether or not it meshes with the overall work, because that's what you're thinking about. In my youth, I dabbled at trying to write a story once, and it definitely ended up like that.
Yeah, it's really like amateurish stuff. It speaks to like the way that writing, just going off instead of like thinking about what should happen in a story, creating beats, creating moments, creating character interactions, and like we had spoke of kind of recently, the idea of character arcs where things change, characters begin in one place and end in another place.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking, is like, isn't the forward momentum of conflict and resolution kind of what makes stories interesting and work?
Yeah, you'd think so, but apparently it's more like, oh, look, the character I like is doing the thing I like. That's more. And also, besides like being in a plot cul-de-sac, there is also very literally the repeating themselves, wherein, and again, this could be the translator's problem, but if I read the phrase rueful grin or smiling Riley like one more fucking time in these books, I am going to lose my fucking shit. Sometimes those words will appear three times a page.
Oh, like, no.
Bro, I cannot believe... This is the kind of shit you cannot get away with if this was like a professional work, you know?
Uh-huh.
Somebody would be like, no, you can't put he smiled Riley four times in the same fucking paragraph, you idiot. It seems like stuff that would be obvious, but I don't know. Have I just been sticking to like really well-written books? I didn't think so. I feel like I've read a lot of different things. Shit.
I mean, it could definitely be an issue with the translation. I feel like that is the most likely candidate, if we're being generous. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes a translator is not a localizer. I feel like those are two different skill sets, really. You know, the ability to know what is being written and put it into a different language, and then also how to make that, like, make it sound good and interesting and new in that language maybe requires something else.
Well, I do have a lot of sympathy, because it does seem like the only way the author knows how to describe a character emoting is giving some sort of strange smile. This author is obsessed with people giving smiles to each other.
They're just smirking at each other all over the place.
Everybody in these books is standing around giving each other weird smiles all the time. What the fuck is wrong with these people? This also has the single most amateurish thing that I've complained about a billion times, but this has one of the worst cases of small world syndrome that I have ever read in any book series.
Oh, okay. Now, I think I know what you're talking about. I generally think of this as the Skywalker syndrome. You know, the issue with Star Wars is that for some reason, all the big events tie back to the Skywalker family for some reason.
Sure, sure.
I think
that's definitely a component.
Yeah. These characters keep running into the most convenient plot devices wherever they go. Right.
Yeah. In this case, it is a very, very literal and severe case of small world syndrome, wherein
the world is literally tiny.
Yeah. The world seems to be extremely small, in that there is about 10 people total anywhere a character goes, there's one of those 10 people there to do a thing. For example, our main character early on, and the plot is essentially that the character is a treasure hunter who searches for treasures in ruins, right? That's mm-hmm. basically the whole plot. He goes to ruins and he hunts treasure there. Very early on, he's at a ruin and he sees a pair of girls and they're in trouble, so he saves their life. Then later on, he gets into trouble and he sends out an SOS, and by chance, they're the ones that save him, right?
Right.
Yeah. Those same two girls. Then later on, he is buying ammo for his gun at an ammo store. And guess who turns out to be the regulars at the ammo store?
It's those girls he saved.
It's those girls. Then he gets hired to do a job by the city, and he goes to his job site, and guess who else the city hired to do the job? It's those two girls, baby. You knew it. Uh-huh. You know it. And this is constantly happening. They will introduce a character every once in a while. There's probably like one or two new characters per novel, but then those two characters get added into the mixing bowl. They kind of get swapped out as if, like, you know, you have like, you know, you're playing, you're fielding your team and you have to like occasionally bench someone. That's what this story is. And that's a problem with like a lot of amateur writing, but it is uniquely bad here. And again, the author is desperately afraid of anything changing the relationships between any of these characters. So nothing happens. These characters, they interact in the same way over and over and over again. Nothing seems to be able to change their relationship, no matter what. The main character shoots one of the other characters through the chest at one point with a gun, a big one.
A big gun.
And that does not change their relationship. They have the same relationship after that they did before.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you shot me that one time and we're still friends.
Sure, that's true. But now you fear me.
It's true. I moved out of state to get away from him.
Yeah, you have a healthy fear. which was the point. So like every aspect of like amateur writing, it rears its ugly head here, and I just keep reading them in self-delusional hope that maybe the writing will get better. You just assume if somebody writes enough, just by sheer force of practice, they will get better, right?
Yeah, well, you would hope.
So,
you know, I feel like there are people out there who and I'm not trying to say that, you know, they can't get better if they practice, but they are intent on not getting better despite the practice.
Well, there is definitely that thing where if you meet with success, you mm-hmm. don't feel the need to improve, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is a real thing.
You know, I have to think of the like the Uwe Bolds of the world. Presumably presumably Uwe Boll has seen movies. He's seen lots of movies. He knows what a good script is like, because he's seen good movies. He's read good scripts. He knows it's out there, and yet he is intent on making one specific like level of film, one specific type of film.
Okay, well, hold on. Uwe Boll knows exactly what he's doing.
That's what I'm saying.
He is completely in control.
I'm just saying you can do better. Some people choose not to.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. But this guy, I don't think is doing a Uwe Boll.
Okay.
He seems
you
to
think
be
he's
doing,
just legitimately bad.
I think he is just doing the same like bad writing tropes that like all amateur writers do. Sometimes even worse, like, you know, this guy, we talked a bit about like in the Ishiro novels, you asked me if there was like egregious sexualization, right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, like, no, that one's not bad. It's kind of like the standard. Well, this one is really bad. Like, female characters cannot appear on the page without having their bodies described. And all of them are, by the author's words, sensuous or bewitching. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like every time a character appears,
it makes me feel gross.
It's really gross. In fact, there's one character in particular who is like, her breasts are plot relevant.
God damn it.
So they are, every time she's involved, they are, she, even she is talking about them. Her friends are talking about,
okay,
them.
Okay, well,
character
the,
is
the
talking
more you're
about
describing
them.
This, I feel like this is my cynical take on this is that this is strictly a product made entirely top to bottom to appeal to the sexy anime girl figure clientele. The gooner, the coomers, as you will.
maybe. You know,
they're just putting out another medium for which to sell the objects, which are the women, the female characters. Those are the objects they're trying to sell. To be honest, I'm surprised that they went for a written word format. It feels like maybe that's not going to be the first choice for a lot of these people, but you know, to each their own. I guess people read smut all the time.
Hey, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of erotica out there. I think the weirder choice here is that, contrary to a lot of that stuff, almost all the women are like adult women. But the main character is a child.
Ew, ew, ew.
So all these adult women are pedophiles, like, essentially.
Yeah.
It's so weird. What is happening? And God, do we need to do something about it?
I don't know. Let's take a break and ponder that. And then when we come back, we can talk about something completely different.
All right. TV. Boy, it's an essential part of modern life, isn't it, Nate? But we're not watching Friends, are we?
No. No, we're not.
We're watching Anime 2025.
Spring premieres.
Spring Anime premieres 2025.
In 2025, people, in the spring, we got them. You want them. Let's talk about some anime.
We're watching them. We're watching more anime. And guess what? We watched some different ones than last time.
What?
I didn't watch a single show this time that I watched last time. I promise you.
I did not either, actually. This was all new lineup for me.
Oh, yeah?
I'm taking a sample. You know, I'm nibbling on all the little hors d'oeuvres, the crudité.
Prove it, coward.
Okay. Oh, you want me to prove it? You want me to talk about some anime that I watched?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
prove it.
You know what? Let's start off with one that we both said we were looking forward to, because this is, of course, the big original anime, not based off of any existing work of 2025 from Studio MAPPA.
That's not very responsible of them. Shouldn't
no.
they base it on an established IP so you get an ROI?
It's so hard to build brand presence these days. You got to start somewhere. It's essential to have an existing backing going into these things. You're fighting an uphill battle, but it helps when you have some recognizable names on board, like Studio MAPPA doing the animation, like Shinichiro Watanabe doing the script writing and the directing and the action scene directing.
You got some star power.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, we have a little bit of clout behind this one. I am, of course, talking about Lazarus.
Yes.
Shinichiro Watanabe's fourth attempt at doing a Cowboy Bebop-like. This time, it's about the opioid epidemic, apparently, which is something that I was not expecting reading the preview from, you know, the look forward episode we did a couple weeks ago. The preview had said that the world of Lazarus is in the near future, where a good scientist, I guess, is I've never heard of those, but you know, I guess some of them might be good people.
What?
He unveiled a miracle drug upon the world. And I assumed that this was going to be some kind of like, you know, like, like it would, it physically made people more fit, more mentally acute. Like it was actually some kind of super product that elevated people to a superhuman level.
And like ecstasy without ketamine in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Right.
It turns out that that's not what it was. It was actually like, it was just,
oh no,
it was just a painkiller.
It had the ketamine in it.
No, it didn't have the ketamine.
Oh, so it's even worse.
What
than
he
that?
Made was essentially, addictionless, opioids. Like that was the big revelation, which I feel like we've heard that claim before.
Yeah. I'd say we're kind of in the middle of that one.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a much more on the nose take on the current opioid crisis in the world. From everything I see, it like I was saying, the scientist says, all right, I created this amazing new painkiller that has no drawbacks whatsoever, and it completely takes away all your pain, which, like, first off, doesn't sound actually that great. Like, there's a real condition where people can't feel pain, and it actually sounds like it's hell on them because they have to constantly, like, watch out for, like, hurting themselves in small ways they wouldn't notice. And
yes,
like,
so you're the Deadpool movie.
Yeah, the Deadpool movie. We've all seen
or
Deadpool.
That one that just came out called Novocaine.
Yeah, Novocaine. You know, the boys guy, Jack, yeah. Little Jackie Jack.
The Quaid, the little Quaid boy.
Yeah, Jack Quaid. Same thing. He invented a drug that takes away all your pain and is apparently not addictive, apparently. And then he goes away, he disappears for 3 years, and then comes back and says, hey, by the way, that's actually all poison, and it's killing you, and you're all going to die in, like, starting in 30 days now. And the first person that can find me, I will tell the cure to. But until someone finds me, people are going to start dying. They're going to start dying.
So he's doing the fourth international hide and seek competition.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is hidden somewhere, which he already made a mistake. There is vast communities of geocachers in the real world that I know of that can identify the coordinates of someone based solely on cloud patterns in the backgrounds of their photos. You know, the will, the expertise and the professionalism exists to make this a joke of a competition to him. He would be found out within minutes, within hours, being generous.
No, he probably uses a proxy.
Oh, maybe he uses five proxies. No one's going to find him then.
Yeah, maybe he's using a Tor browser.
Maybe the backgrounds in his photos are all green screen. That would actually be a smart thing to do.
Maybe he's at a net cafe. He's playing StarCraft.
He's just walking out of a Starbucks.
Yeah.
He's live streaming himself.
You'd never be able to find him.
And you know, the main plot of the first episode is essentially Suicide Squad. They're just doing Suicide Squad story. We have a hardcore parkour guy. Who's in prison for being a badass parkour dude. He was too radical.
Love that.
They locked him up. And you know, he gets offered by government lady the option to reduce his sentence, of which he was serving 888 years. They make a specific call out of that number. I don't know what exactly they're going for with that or if it was supposed to symbolize anything. But
huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they speak like, hey, you're a parkour guy. You're in prison for having, you know, for being too parkour badass. And you're in here for 800 years.
800 years.
He was sentenced to 888 years in prison.
Triple eights.
Yeah, trip eights, you know? He's got those trips.
So close to 777.
And he's like, hey, all right, well, you'll reduce my sentence, but I'll still be getting out an old man, so screw that. I'm not going to join your government team. You know, she wants him to join their government Suicide Squad team to go find Scientist Man to discover the cure for his evil opioids.
Classic plot.
I don't know. It's a weird scene because... Like, the first thing that they majorly feature visually... Are you familiar with the concept of the Panopticon prison?
Yes.
Well, he's in one of those.
Yeah.
Like, he's in a literal Panopticon prison. Which as far as...
Sure, he can be observed at all times.
Well, again, they went with the most literal interpretation, and it's not like...
he's in the Magneto box?
Well, he's not in the Magneto box. He's literally in a big circular prison that has a central guard tower with one guard in it at all times.
Cool.
Not even cameras. That's the
Riddick one.
Yeah, he's in the Riddick prison.
He's in the Riddick prison. I'll kill you with my teacup.
Yeah. And so the majority of the episode is, you know, him using his badass hardcore parkour skills to break out of prison. Then he gets captured anyway, because the rest of the Suicide Squad are also cool guy badasses that all have their own Ocean's 11 skill, you know? So you've got a driver, you've got a tech lady, who does the computer thing where she moves stuff around with her hands. You know, classic.
Oh, yeah. Minority Report.
Yeah. Minority. She's doing the Minority Report. You've got femme fatale lady, and you've got a high school kid who's good at drones. Like, that's his thing.
I'm the young one.
he's drone guy. That's his thing.
And
he's also
me,
the young
kid
one.
Kid genius.
Yeah. And he drops out of school because, like, well, everyone's dying anyway in 30 days. I'm not going to go to school anymore. Like, that's his character.
That's totally reasonable.
Yeah, it's the most reasonable thing out of all these characters in the entire episode. Like, yeah, you go, kid. Fuck school.
Okay, I only have one question here. Why did everybody in the world take the fentanyl?
People like getting high.
Can't argue with that. All right, I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really excited to watch it.
Yeah, no, really it's pretty good. It's got some real tight animation, real tight parkour action scenes. It was fun. It's got that Watanabe flavor. You know, if you remember Spike doing Bruce Lee moves all over the place, it's got that. It's got tons of that.
Yep.
It's got the guns. It's got, you know, jumping off buildings. Yeah, the whole thing. Visually, it was great. I had a fun time watching it. I don't know where the story's going. It's honestly kind of falling a little bit flat for me. I feel like, hey man, drugs are bad is maybe kind of a washed out sentiment at this point. Hey, you know what?
Untrue.
Yeah, untrue. Yeah, untrue.
Untrue. Obviously, untrue.
I mean, opioids are kind of bad, you know, in practice.
Well, come on. It's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag.
Do you remember the Blackjack OVA episode about the doping drug that turned out to be like forcefully killing people through like cell death?
Yes.
And Blackjack had to travel around the world in search of the one true person who actually knew the cure. And they were like hiding in the middle of the desert. So he had to meet up with some Bedouins who like took him to like a hidden oil rig where he met the one person who like tried to kill herself so that he couldn't cure the fucking drug scourge.
Yeah, it's dope.
That's this, right?
Yeah, it's basically that.
It is dope. That's dope. That's dope as fuck. It was a dope episode.
So I don't know. I'll watch the next episode. It's visually pleasing.
Sure. And that's what matters. Yeah, I'm very excited to watch that.
It's anime. Aesthetics are all that matter, really.
It's anime.
Yeah.
I wish it had been like, I don't know, anything besides like a fentanyl epidemic. Maybe like a VHS tape that kills you if you watch it and they have to track down.
If this was about the Suicide Squad, future tech Suicide Squad hunting down Ring Girl Sadako, that would be dope.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Or like anything, any other kind of MacGuffin.
That's the plot of Rings, right?
No, the plot of Rings is that the tape gets turned into a viral YouTube video.
God, that's so dumb.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. I still like that movie. I like all of those movies.
I like Ring versus Grudge. That was great.
I like Freddy versus Jason.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay, yeah. Did you watch... You watched some anime? You have to have watched some anime.
Of course I watched some anime. Now, of course, like I said last time, I did watch the first episode of G-Cux, which I'm not going to go directly back into. I just want to mention the two interesting things about it. One being that it's the middle third of the movie. The first episode is the middle third of the movie. So they
wait,
cut
so
off.
The episode has a prequel episode. The movie has a prequel episode not included in the anime.
It will be included in the anime. I'm not sure yet whether they're going to sprinkle it over the whole season or just get it out of the way in the next episode. But the first episode of the show, the way they've structured the season of the show, is to deliberately obscure the connection to original Gundam in the first episode.
I see.
So that you go in cold, you are immediately introduced to the characters and their lives before we get into any of the like overarching Gundam stuff, which is not a bad idea, because the characters are fun. The premise is really exciting without knowing anything about it. All the stuff that happens in the movie to preload it is specifically for like people who would go see a Gundam movie in theaters. They're like, oh, the Gundam stuff. So it's a really smart, good decision. In fact, it is so smart, it is exactly the thing that I said I wish Kijin Gentosho had done, in that, like, sprinkling the backstory throughout the season instead of starting with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just getting directly into the premise of the show. So I am very much in support of this. I guess the only other thing is that I wonder if maybe, like, giving any kind of context would have helped a little bit. Because if you just go in without that beginning third, you're really just like, so it's Gundam because there's like Gundams, but like what is this?
What are we doing here, folks?
It's a girl and she meets a girl and then there's a Gundam. Okay. Frankly, I don't think it matters that much because the animation is really good. The character designs are really fun. The animation... I mean, it's just, it like moves in the way that like you immediately go, oh yeah. Oh no. This is what it's supposed to be like. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of problems, but I don't know. Do people care about original Gundam? I don't know. I don't know anymore. Zeon? I don't know.
It's hard to get people to watch stuff from the 90s, let alone going all the way back to the 70s. Even with the recap movies. The
original Gundam is good, though. Like, it is still really good. It's cool. It's, like, cool stuff. I don't know.
Gundam.
So, yeah. Gundam. Watch it. It's gonna be good. You're gonna like it. The connecting tissue here is that I did watch... The new thing I watched was Moonrise, which is the big Netflix one.
Oh, wait. I was interested because that was supposed to be, what was it, an entirely new form of animation never before seen by human eyes?
It had an entirely new form of animation that had never been seen before by human eyes. It's an entirely revolutionary style of animation that no one's had ever done before.
What is this amazing new technology? You have to tell me.
It was 3D.
Oh. Oh.
They did 3D.
It was 3D?
It was 3D.
Oh, no.
I don't know what else I was supposed to take away from it. You know what? Hold on a second. I'm just really going to quickly Google what it was supposed to be. I'm really curious. While I do this, I will say the weird thing about Moonrise is that it is also just Gundam.
It's Gundam. They're doing Gundam.
It's Gundam.
Again.
It's
so we've got people in space and we have people on Earth and presumably they have issues with each other.
Essentially, it's not super clear what's happening in the first episode. But what we do know is it seems like the colony on the moon has attacked the Earth and declared independence. So it's essentially Zeon.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is just gonna be more of the Gundam stuff. What we do know also, though, is that there is sort of some kind of like Terminator invasion. There's a lot of like Terminators running around, and our main characters seem to be battling Terminators.
Are they like flesh off robot Terminators, or are they the in disguise ones?
Yeah. No, flesh off, not skin jobs.
Okay, not skin jobs. They got the metal. They got chrome boys walking around.
Yeah, they got chrome boys. They don't talk. They're just like swarming. Our main boys all have super capes. I think.
So, like, I'm interested what that means, because I'm assuming that you said the super capes were essentially the what they have instead of Gundams.
Yeah, they have sort of like transforming type weapons, but they seem to be tied to like wearing super capes. Not really sure how this new style of animation really could not identify. Really, if you asked me as soon as I finished watching the episode what it was, I could not tell you. But what did strike me was watching the show, made by Wit Studio, by the way. This is another Wit Studio production. I was like, you know, looking at these characters, which are, they start off the show by showing a flash forward to like grim Terminator style battle. And then we go back to the beginning, which is all our characters being like extremely rich, like Nepo babies, playboys, which is not a great way to build sympathy. I mean,
those are the kind of people that would go to the moon to colonize the moon
and become,
you know?
Become grim superheroes.
Yeah. Nepo tech babies, they're going to take over the moon.
But what struck me immediately, and this was a really weird thing that happened, was I immediately was like, why do all the characters look like Full Metal Alchemist characters? And then as soon as the episode ended, I did realize, Hiromu Harukawa did do all of the character designs for this.
Oh, no way. I did not realize that. Okay, so we got another big name coming back.
Why didn't they advertise it with that instead of the all new animation thing?
Maybe that was at her request. I don't want to be like, I don't want to be central to this thing. I don't want my name to come up when you Google it.
Apparently, and I learned later, and I learned a bunch of stuff later. One being that Netflix apparently refused to advertise this show.
Okay, seems like you...
Which would explain why it just showed up there.
Seems like shooting yourself in the foot a little bit.
Yeah,
generally, if you have something that you want to get views, you would advertise it.
Yeah, I don't know why they did that. Seems like a weird choice, especially considered they did advertise the other stuff.
Now, this is not an episode one, correct? This is a self-contained short film?
No, this is an episode one.
Oh.
They released multiple episodes at the same time. And apparently also this is based on a novel. This is a novel adaptation.
It is based off of the novelization of the prequel to Moonfall from Roland Emmerich.
I was hoping it was based on Moon Crash, the DLC to the Prey, Arcane Studios Prey game.
I mean, Moon Crash was basically their pitch for, what was the time loop game? Deathloop. Yeah.
Which is an incredible game, but not quite as good as Moon Crash, which I think is one of my favorite games ever made.
Just the roguelike DLC mode of Prey 2017.
Well, it's a completely standalone game. It kind of has nothing to do with the main game, besides sharing a few assets. I don't know if any of you guys played the Moon Crash DLC. It's probably the best DLC ever made. I could say that for sure. Maybe one of the best games ever made.
Oh.
If you like, you know, immersive sims. It's fucking great. Better than this anime.
Yeah, and it does. But Moon Crash was not an all new form of video game animation, never before seen by human eyes.
No, it seemed to be just a blend of 2D and 3D animation, like we've seen a lot of recently.
Oh.
It didn't look bad. I will say that. It did not look bad, but it wasn't like, wow, this animation's fucking great. I got to watch the rest of this show. It looked like, okay, great. I hope Wit goes back to just 2D stuff, but who knows?
I mean, how does it compare to something like, you know, Arcane, which is kind of being held up as like good 3D action animation, right?
It doesn't look anything like Arcane. It looks like an anime.
It looks like an anime.
Yeah, it just happens to have a lot of 3D stuff in it and probably a lot of 2D animation overlaid onto 3D, which would be my guess at what they meant by all new animation.
Oh, so they're just rotoscoping. They're just animating over a 3D model.
Maybe. I really can't tell you, and I do not know. I cannot find anything on what the actual process was.
Well, they wouldn't lie and just spew out meaningless buzzwords, would they?
Who knows? But Yeah, final thought is the animation is fine, but it's not in a way that you would be like, wow, you got to watch this. And the main characters are kind of insufferable. So, I don't know. Made a bad impression.
Well, that is unfortunate. I was looking forward to having my mind blown by technology that I could not comprehend.
I know.
But it sounds like I got to wait a little bit longer for that.
I was hoping that it would be completely animated by people drawing in one of those little sand gardens.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be really cool.
That'd be sick as hell. But I don't know. Wait, hey, you know, this is the kind of thing where it would be totally harmless to watch the first episode to see if it hooks you. Because there's nothing egregious about it. It just happened to be like, well, wait, that was it?
I mean, I think that is probably the worst reaction you could have. especially if you're hyping it up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you just did something that is, like, predictable and not surprising. And you were telling me that it was going to be this brand new thing that you're really proud of. You were so proud of it, you were hyping it up based on the fact that this is supposed to be some brand new type of animation. So I think that having a, you know, milquetoast reaction to nothing new is probably the absolute worst you could get.
I wouldn't say it was the worst, but
I would legitimately prefer something that looks like amateur and bad and like confusingly bad compared to something that is so mundane that I can't see what you were trying to hype up to begin with.
Well, let's put that to the test, because I'm sure there are more shows in this season that will end up bafflingly bad. Haven't found one yet, but I'm sure we're getting there.
I've got one I can talk about right now.
Oh, great. Why don't you throw one out?
I watched Catcher in the Ballpark.
It has the Gyarus, it has the bar culture thing.
Yeah, bar culture, disaffected male office worker.
Yeah, you love baseball.
Well, okay, that is the most surprising thing about this. We've talked many times about how anime and manga tend to pick one specific topic and hyper-focus the entire theme of the story, the manga, the anime, around that one thing, right?
Yeah.
And I want to be very clear, this is not about baseball. This is about food vendors at a baseball stadium.
And so nobody plays baseball, or?
We do not see the game being played. We do not see the players. It does not focus on that. This is strictly, specifically, only about the beer girls that go around flirting with depressed-looking men, trying to get them to buy more beer.
You know what? I have to say, I don't think I've ever seen a woman selling beer or even like the hot dogs or whatever at a baseball stadium, let alone an attractive woman.
Well, apparently it's an entire cottage industry in the Japanese baseball stadium game. You know, it is a staple job to have a cohort of young, sexy ladies wearing basically sexualized versions of a baseball team uniform.
This is such a throwback, because that's like, isn't this like a cigarette girls? Isn't that basically?
No, they're cigarette girls, but with beer. And they go around and they have kegs, like keg backpacks that they wear.
Yeah, like the Red Bull girls on Long Beach.
around and they offer to sell you a fresh poured beer. And they flirt with you, and they talk you up a bit, and then they try and get you to buy more beer. And this is that is conceptually what this show is about. Our two, you know, point of view characters are, I cannot remember the guy's name, some dude who hates his job,
some asshole,
and he, you know, his safe space is the baseball game. He doesn't even like baseball. He just says it. He's like, I'm not really interested in like sports or baseball, but like, I like going to games at the baseball stadium because it lets me, like, just be anonymous in a crowd and sit down for a while and have girls flirt with me and I get to drink beer. Like, that's his game. That's his hobby.
That's so weird and pathetic and bizarre.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not the sign of a selfie, of a healthy, like, mental state, or in his case, a physique.
That is so disconnected from any baseball game I have ever been to, you know? And the amount of fucking hassle it takes to go to a baseball game, just, like, in a regular season, not even like a playoff game or whatever, just like driving there, finding parking, getting into the park, getting patted down, having your gun taken away, finding a seat in the nosebleeds, having to leave, forgetting your credit card on your seat. You have to go back. You buy the most disgusting hot dog. You drop it on the guy behind you or the in front of you. You get into a fist fight. His buddies come. They kick your ass in the parking lot. And then you got to drive home with a broken arm. This is like, why would you do that for fun?
Well, it turns out that not everything on that list happens in the Japanese baseball fandom.
What?
I know, right? In fact, this guy, he just goes there and he just parks. He doesn't even have to find parking. He just parks. There's space.
What?
And he walks in and he doesn't get patted down. And he just like sits down and drinks a beer. And he doesn't even watch the game. Sometimes the players aren't even there. They just let him in when there's not even a game happening.
This is why Japanese people like baseball?
Yeah, because they don't actually like baseball. They just like going to drink a beer in a civilized setting amongst other people.
This is fucking insane.
It's essentially a giant bar.
This is blowing my fucking mind.
So on a character microcosm level, we have hit that guy, you know, what's his face? Some dude. And we have our main character, Ruriko, who is one of the beer girls. And the central gag is that he is, you know, kind of that oblivious male nerd archetype where he cannot distinguish when a girl is just like engaging with him to be nice versus genuinely right. flirting with him.
Yeah, like we established, if you're a man and you can intuit the feelings of a woman, you're a creep.
Yeah, exactly. And we have Ruriko, who in standard Gyaru fashion has a inexplicable, like, burning crush on this absolute nobody wet paper towel of a man. And her clumsy attempts at trying to flirt with him only to come off to him as like, oh, she's just trying to sell me beer. She's just being nice. You know, those are characters. That's a story. You can imagine a million. Well, let's not say a million. Let's say five. Let's say five different scenarios that can play out from that specific setup. And then they just kind of do that over and over again.
Like the guys get drunk and they sexually harass the Gyarus.
No. Think a little bit more pro-social than that. You know, we have in our first episode, at least, one of the central conflicts to that week's, you know, story is he comes across a lost child at the stadium and he teams up with the Gyaru to help this child find their parents who are drunk at the baseball game. They got drunk and lost their child.
Okay, that part definitely rings true. I remember something like that.
And then, you know, they encounter a grumpy security guard and he scolds the parents for losing their child. But he doesn't extort them for money or beat them or shoot them.
A Richard Jewell type, right?
Yeah, Richard Jewell type. You know, an Artie Bunker type.
There's what if there was a Richard Jewell subplot going on in the background? That would be so fucking insane. I would love that, actually.
I'm just imagining Clint Eastwood going, what the heck is a Gyaru? What the fuck are you talking about?
He's eating his Cheetos. He's eating his Cheetos from his director's chair. And he's like, this seems weirdly familiar.
So I did not come away super positive on this. It's pretty bog standard, you know, Gyaru nerd setup. And in fact, may even be too subpar even for me and my particular taste on this one. I will say, though, it did leave me with a strange urge to go kill John Lennon. Not sure what's going on there. but I'll have to revisit that one. So yeah, I don't know. I'm probably not going to watch any more of this.
Wait, did John Hinckley Jr. Go to a lot of baseball games?
I'm just imagining him sitting down on the curb after shooting Lennon and taking out a volume of a Kiaru manga.
if he had been born like 20 years later, instead of getting into like folk music, he would have been like reviewing anime on a podcast.
Oh God, no. All right, I need to move on from this one. Oh God. All right.
Oh God.
I did watch some other Jesus anime. Christ. I watched a couple more. We'll get through these real quick.
Okay.
First, I want to talk about real quick one that I had thrown into our preview list that I was looking forward to, and that is Food for the Soul. This is, of course, the slice of life anime about four college friends who decide to start a cooking club at their college.
Okay, let's just go through this real fast. So just answer the first question that comes to mind. Is it horny?
It's not horny.
Well, then why is it a cooking show?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. But it has all the classic signs of something that is going to go horny at any moment, at the drop of a hat. You know, the crack of an egg, if you will.
Ugh.
But no, it is mostly I'm trying to remember the name of that other anime that you watched. Asobatai, is that right?
Asobe Asobase?
Asobe Asobase.
The three girls who are friends.
Yeah. They have a hangout club at school. It's basically that.
Yeah.
You know, it's we have
fuck,
four.
I love Asobe Asobase. His shit is so fucking funny. the girl who pretends she can't speak Japanese. I think about that all the time.
You know, we have four college friends. Our main girl is your prototypical kind of like shy, quiet girl. She has actually quite a bit of anxiety, crippling anxiety about meeting new people and trying new experiences. You know, standard Gen Z, Gen Alpha fears of being, you know, out and open and untethered by society after graduating high school.
Oh, sure.
And she gets roped. She happens upon a old grade school friend that she had when she was younger. So instantly she's like, all right, this girl goes to college with me. I used to know her. That makes her safe and easy to engage with because we used to be friends before going to different high schools. And then, I personally am really into cooking. She's like super into cooking shows. I guess in the world of this anime, there is a mascot led like cooking show. I don't even know how to describe it other than this is a very clear Pikachu knockoff.
There's a cooking Pikachu?
Yeah, cooking Pikachu. She watches this show every week that is an actor in a big, you know, felt mascot costume of a Pikachu like.
Oh, it's a person in a costume? Yeah, I thought it would be like an animated thing.
No, it's a person
thing.
In a costume, and it's actually very funny whenever like, so the mascot character will be cooking on the show, and then at the end of whatever dish they're making, they'll go to take a bite to taste it, and because they're a person in a mascot suit, they shove their entire arm inside the mouth of the costume to get the food to their mouth. It's okay, kind of funny.
That makes me chuckle.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that.
And so she watches that every week, and she's like, I like cooking, and I'm going to use this interesting cooking to meet more people in college. I'm not going to be a shy girl anymore. And
good
she
for
meets,
you. Good yeah. for you, girl.
And so how serendipitous when she meets this college this old grade school friend who is a college freshman with her. And she's like, hey, it's great that we finally get to hang out again. I'm trying to get me and three of my other friends to start this cooking club with me. And she's like, wow, that sounds amazing. That's like totally up my alley. And then, you know, they go and get club approval, which again is, I'm never not going to think is weird that you need to have like bureaucratic school approval on paper to like hang out with your friends and do a specific activity.
Well, do they get funds?
No, but they do get access to a club room. I guess that's the big, That's the big catch here, because the joke at the end of the episode is that her friend who started the club and recruited her is like, yeah, actually, I don't give a shit about cooking. I just like wanted to make up a bullshit club so that we could have a club room to hang out in and goof off and like do stuff in.
Deeply, you know, relate to this guy.
Yeah,
deeply.
And so that is basically the first episode, is her joining this club, realizing that her friend isn't that serious about it, and her resolving to teach everybody about cooking, so that they're, I guess, not scamming the school out of a club room.
Okay.
And then the B plot is her trying to work up the courage to go into a restaurant that she's never eaten at before.
Ooh.
Yeah.
She's intimidated by a restaurant, huh?
Yeah. She's that kind of shy girl.
Damn. That's tough.
She can't talk to people very well. And she, in fact, she makes a big point of saying that she's never eaten at a restaurant without her parents before.
Dog.
I know. And she's in college. Like, come on, girl. You got to learn at some point.
Yeah, come on.
There are things that you need to learn to survive.
There are things you got to do.
Yeah, and I'm not even, like, it's great that she can cook for herself. That's great. Everyone should know that. But everyone should also know how to just, like, walk into a restaurant and say, hey, I would like this thing from the menu. Here's my money.
Yeah. Also, you know, the restaurants that are kind of at first glance intimidating are usually also the ones where the waiters are really eager to tell you how to order.
Mm-hmm.
Have you dined with us before?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I've had tapas.
Maybe I'm weird. I am 100% in favor of the trend of Japanese restaurants that just serve one thing. Like, they're full-on sit-down restaurants with wait service. You know, they'll bring you water, they'll give you drinks, they'll bus your table. But they only serve the one thing. They don't even have menus because they just make one thing.
Well, as a big fan of hot dogs, yes. I mean, this is...
But they're not even selling them out of a cart. Like, this is a whole-ass restaurant just to make one item. And generally that is considered a good thing because that means they're really good at making that one thing, right?
Well, they better be, because if they're not, boy, that place is not going to last long.
So I don't know. I think that this is fun. I like the non-creep dynamic that all of these characters have with each other. They are just kind of about hanging out and doing cool close-up shots of making food.
All right.
And who doesn't like anime food, you know? I relate. It's honestly kind of one of the shows that I liked most out of this season so far.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Sucker.
All right. I did watch something else. I did watch some more stuff. We talked about Lazarus, talked about Food for the Soul, talked about Catcher in the Ballpark. Last premiere that I watched this week was something that, again, we both expressed interest in. You haven't watched it yet. I watched Kowloon Generic Romance.
Yes, I am going to watch this one. Do you maybe want to save it until after I've watched it? Because I'm definitely going to be watching this.
Okay, you know what? That sounds fair. Let's save it for next time. I'll have watched the next episode by then. We can compare notes. I did start reading the manga as well, so there are some interesting things.
Jumped right in.
Yeah, there are some interesting things going on. I want to say real quick, another example of the anime going way hornier than the manga. This is becoming a troubling trend. I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm going to be keeping my eye out for that. Definitely. I'm going to be watching very closely for that.
Okay, we'll save that for next time. And I guess that's it for me for this week of anime spring 2025 in spring anime premieres.
Anime premieres 2025 spring anime premieres.
25 springs.
Oh boy. Okay, I'm gonna finish up this fucking book so I can just be done with it and never think about it again.
Never read a book again.
Until the anime premieres, and then I'll have to go all the way back and start this process all over again.
Okay.
Oh, fuck.
Well, once again, handsome, beautiful listeners, you're with us here. That's got to mean something, right? And you stuck with it till the end.
Wow.
For better or for worse. I can't imagine.
Good job.
For better.
You're slightly, no, perhaps for definitely better. You're slightly more aware of what not to watch. you'll waste less of
exactly,
your life.
Exactly. Or maybe in a rare case, what to watch. Maybe you're a contrarian. Maybe you have oppositional defiance disorder and you're going to go watch all this stuff because we said not to. And sure. That works too. We get paid all the same. I mean,
I'm fine with that as well. Yeah. I mean, go and watch the TikTok videos, the Instagram videos, the Blue Sky videos.
check us out at
our mailing list videos, yeah. The videos we put up on our Patreon.
Check out our snack box that we just launched. It's got some good stuff in there.
Find us on Red Note. where else? And get all your anime recommendations. This week's anime recommendation is Jikooks.
All right. Bye. It's a very funny answer.
I thought so. It made me laugh so hard.